Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
What is up, Nets world? We're back here on the Believe in Nets podcast. As always, big thanks to all of you for listening. Make sure to subscribe to Believe in Nets on all streaming platforms, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube. Smash the like button, leave a five-star review if you can. That really goes a long way. I'm your host, Eric Slater, Brooklyn Nets beat reporter for ClutchPoints.com. Recording this at about noon on Thursday. Just recorded a full draft of the entire Nets roster with CJ Holmes of the New York Daily News and Lucas Kaplan of Nets Daily. So that's going to be this episode. The premise of the exercise was, who would you want from this Nets team? Who would you want over the next 3 to 4 years for a title window, which is the perceived title window if the Nets do stay this course and continue to try to stay in contention over the next 3 to 4 years of this Nets roster with their contracts in mind and all that, drafting them from 1 to 15. So reach some really interesting conclusions based on that about how you value certain guys on this team. And it really gives you a little bit of a glimpse into, you know, which guys they could be prioritizing moving forward from a number of different reasons, whether it be their contract and then also taking into account their production on the floor, how they might fit with stars that the Nets potentially try to go after. So I think it was a really productive exercise. Just briefly touching before we get to that on where the Nets are at. You know, they played 12 games post All-Star break under Kevin Ollie. They're 5-7, 23rd in offense, 10th in defense during that span. They won back-to-back matchups with the Atlanta Hawks. They had, you know, two straight games at home against Atlanta, who are directly ahead of them for the final play-in spot, 10th place in the Eastern Conference. They won both of those. And then you started to think, maybe they can get something cooking. They can snap out of these struggles and they can build some momentum towards a play-in berth. And then right after that, they drop a game to the Memphis Grizzlies, who had 9 players and were led by Luke Kennard. And then they lose games to the Detroit Pistons and the Charlotte Hornets, who are two of the worst teams in the league. So last night they lost by 8 to the Orlando Magic. They really can't score offensively. And some of the struggles that we expected coming into the year are really starting to build upon each other, what we saw leading up to Jock Vaughn's firing. So it's not good out in Nets world right now in terms of the product on the floor, but that's why in this episode we take a really nice look and productive look at what it could mean moving forward and how the Nets could prioritize this roster moving forward as they look to potentially acquire some stars and take a step towards contention in the post-Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving era. So really hope you guys enjoy this full draft with CJ and Lucas after the theme music. I'm joined now by Lucas Kaplan of Nets Daily. I guess you could say a veteran of the Believe in Nets podcast at this point, and also making his Believe in Nets debut, new to the Nets beat, CJ Holmes of Nets Daily News. How are you, my man?
Doing well. It's about time, man.
Let's go. How'd you get you on for this one? So where we're at, it's not looking good in Nets world right now. The Nets fan base is in some peril, as they've been, but it's really reaching some bad states. 12 games post All-Star break under Kevin Ollie, 5-7, which sounds good, but it hasn't quite matched that from the eye test. 23rd in offense, 10th in defense. Nets are still hanging around, I guess you could say, 3.5 games back of Atlanta for the Eastern Conference's final play-in spot. But the season looks like it's slipping away pretty much. Just wanted to get brief thoughts on you guys out of the 8 about, you know, how they've looked over these last couple months. Lucas, we'll go to you, and then CJ, you can give yours.
Yeah, I mean, it's been the worst version of what we expected. The defense is top 10, top 15-ish, particularly gets better when they're in the half court, which makes sense. But they just can't score too much of the time, and that bleeds into everything else. There's defensive slippage. Basically, a 33-point first quarter from Orlando last night doomed them. And in the NBA, no matter how good your defense is, you're going to give up 33-point quarters. They happen. Things get hot. And when that happens to the Nets, it's an automatic disqualification. They just don't have the horses to maintain, to hang after a run like that. And so that loss to the Magic was pretty indicative of how it's been going. The play-in looks ever out of grasp. They're four games back. They own the tiebreaker, but, you know, they're running out of time, as Ian Eagle said on the broadcast last night. And I think a lot of Nets fans have understandably either tuned out of the season or are looking ahead to the off season. And, you know, not to spoil too much, but that's probably why we're going to get into this pod today.
CJ, how about you, my man?
You know, it's funny because, you know, when you say a 5-7 stretch, I mean, that's not awful compared to some of the stuff that, you know, we've seen from this team over the past 2 months. It's really hard to, you know, put your finger on the exact, you know, issue that, you know, that's plaguing this team the most, because it just appears to be, you know, so many things. But, you know, my biggest takeaway is just words aren't matching actions right now in Brooklyn. I mean, we were all at shoot around the other day, you know, players talking about how they got punked, how they want to come out in Orlando with more energy and, you know, things of that nature, especially compared to, you know, what happened to them last time they played inside Kia Center. But it just always seems like, you know, especially as of late, that, you know, the words, you know, the preparation time isn't matching, like, you know, the product we're seeing out there on the court. There's a major disconnect with the Nets right now. And, you know, as Lucas said, they're running out of time to figure out how to get connected again, because it just appears that it just feels like this team hasn't been connected consistently, you know, for a very long time now. And it's reflected on in their play.
And that's where we're at. Not connected, playing out of reach, as Lucas and Ian Eagle said. And a lot of Nets fans probably becoming disinterested with just the day-to-day and the games and the outcomes, because, frankly, they're not a team that looks like they're anywhere near a playoff level right now. And that is why, as I touched on in the intro, in this episode, we're going to be getting into a draft of the entire Nets roster and just breaking it down for you guys how we're going through this. So we're going to draft, you know, 1, 2, 3 after another, not a snake, just a regular draft. And we're doing this with, in mind, a 3 to 4 year window, we're saying. So basically, all indications the Nets are trying to stay competitive. They're not going into a rebuild. You know, they're holding on to Mikal Bridges and trying to build this roster out. So we're going to be looking at this up. Who would you want most in that 3 to 4 year window with the Nets looking to take a step towards contention? We're doing this keeping contracts in mind and all that. And I'm going to start it off with the first pick, and I'm going to be taking Mikal Bridges. Much maligned Mikal Bridges over these last 3 weeks. You know, it's been a rough stretch for Mikal. It's been a rough season for the year. He's at 21 points, 4.7 rebounds, 3.7 assists, 44, 36, 81 shooting splits. And it's looked a lot worse than that over the last 13 games. He's around 17 points on 39% shooting from the field, 33% from three. And, you know, the honeymoon phase of the last 27 games of last year, where Mikal was around 27 points on 50-40-90. We entered the season with a lot of people kind of thinking, can Mikal take this next step towards being, you know, I never thought he could be a number one option, and I thought you were going to be disappointed no matter what if you had those expectations. But could he be closer to a number two? Could he be a high-level on-ball creator, do a little bit more offensively like we saw at the end of last year? And a lot of the Nets' offense and things along those lines was predicated on that, you know, coming to fruition. It hasn't. And, you know, we've kind of regressed back to the mean a little bit of what Mikal was in Phoenix. And while I think he's still showing that he can do a little bit more than that, he's having some major struggles with the load and, you know, carrying the offense in the way that they're trying to expect him to. And it's led to a lot of criticism from Nets fans, understandably to a certain extent. But at the same time, man, like, I look at Mikal Bridges and you look at the minutes that this guy has played. Obviously, the Iron Man streak's been a lot to made of that. Hasn't missed a game since high school. You look at the last two seasons, led the NBA in minutes. He's third in minutes right now. Not making full excuses for the guy, but with how much they're expecting him to do and the minutes load that he's carried, played in FIBA this summer too, he looks worn down. And he doesn't look like a guy who's fresh. And more importantly than that, he doesn't look like a guy who's comfortable in this role that he's in, with them expecting him to do a lot more than he can. And frankly, you know, he might be a lot more closer to what we saw in Phoenix, you know, a little bit better, but closer to that. And that's okay. Because this is a guy who's only making $21.7 million this year. And, you know, when you look at other contenders or, you know, teams who are, you know, the Nets aren't a contender, obviously, but, you know, trying to be there. When you look at teams and how they build their rosters, the guys in that $18 to $22 million range, they're not carrying offenses, obviously. I mean, like, you go down the list, and for the Celtics, that's Derek White, Nuggets, Aaron Gordon, like, Cavs, that's Jared Allen, the Bucks, Brooke Lopez, like, guys who are making in that $20 million range. That's where Mikal Bridges is at, and that's obviously have higher expectations for him with this version of the team. But the idea isn't for Mikal to be the best player on this team, and the idea isn't for him to carry the load. I think that's been a misconception amongst Nets fans for some reason. I've never had any interpretation of it that way. But they want to get better guys that will allow him to slide back into a role that he's more comfortable with. And I think that he'll look a lot better than that. I think Nets fans would like him and adore him a lot more if he was in that role. So that's pretty much where I'm at, Mikal. Brief thoughts from you guys, and then we'll get into the second pick.
You know, just my only thought on Mikal in terms of, like, his usage and minutes is I just feel like at the end of the day, only Mikal knows how he feels, right? And if Mikal was feeling worn down, if Mikal couldn't go, I don't think Mikal will go. You know, and the funny thing is, in terms of his, like, you know, consecutive games played streak, he's kind of really standing alone now. Kevon Looney of the Warriors was right behind him in that, and he just missed his first game in like two seasons the other night. And then just these kind of disconnected thoughts. And then kind of like my last point on Bridges, I mean, at the end of the day, I feel like you have to admire a guy from wanting to be out there. It's being out there that wins games, being available for your team that wins games. And if you look at some of these box scores of guys, maybe a generation ago, I mean, these are guys back in the day that used to average like 35 minutes a game. So, or if not more. So, I appreciate Mikal being old school, in that regard. And it's, you know, it's that kind of want to be out there regardless of the results, regardless of how he's shooting it. He's out there every night, and that's, you know, more than most guys in this, you know, league can say. So for that, I think Nets fans should be appreciative of Mikal, and I could see why you would want him with your number one pick.
I would just add that, you know, it's not really an excuse to just notice. We've watched so much Nets basketball over the last year. He does look a little bit worn down from the load as a guy that just wasn't meant to have all of these possessions as a primary creator. And even if you look at the defense, there's this pattern of, okay, I'm going to start the game on Trae Young. I'm going to start the game on Steph Curry. I'm going to start the game on Devin Booker, and I'm going to do well on D for a quarter. And then it just disintegrates throughout the game. I think there are positive signs for Mikal. Like, I think clearly the passing is better than it was at the end of last year. I remember looking, and I've written about this, their offensive rating last year with Dinwiddie off and Mikal on was 104, which would be like bad in 2007. Yeah. And this year with Mikal on and no point guard, that's no Ben, no Schroeder, no Dinwiddie, it's like 115. He's clearly more capable of making more advanced reads, skipping the ball. He's taking more pull-up threes, which I think is good. He's getting to the rim a little bit more, but I think the lift is just gone. I think teams have also figured out you got to be physical with him and get into his dribble, and I think that's causing some problems. But just knowing what we know about Mikal, I have no doubt that he'll have solved some more of those problems next year. You know, could he put on a little muscle this summer to help him? I think that's a strong possibility. I think he'll figure out more comfortable kind of counters with his handle. It's never going to be explosive. But I think, to Eric's original point, he's clearly a better player than he was in Phoenix. And the hope, which I'm not saying is like imminent, but the hope is that you get more offensive talent around him, and he's way more capable of being a release valve, like carrying some bench units for some amount of time, and hopefully the defense scales back up as his offense scales back down. I would say for the $21 million range, I mean, you probably listed four of the best players in that range. That's also like RJ Barrett, Dylan Brooks, Clint Capella money. So I would say, Mikhail, I'm confident in him being closer to those first group of guys that you mentioned than some of the other $20 million a year guys.
Yeah, and pretty much, you know, closing out Mikhail, because the Nets have a total zero, you know, in their highest salary slot at Ben Simmons, it's, you know, directing all of the attention and all the responsibility towards Mikhail when, you know, that's not the vision going forward. That's obviously not how the Nets want this to go. So he's taking all the heat. He's playing every game. He's taking all that. And that's not, you know, how the Nets want this to go moving forward and just getting into the contract situation quickly. You know, he's under contract next year at $23.3 million, 2025-26 at $25 million. So it's one of the better value contracts in the league. The Nets have 2 years, you know, to figure this out. And then likely if they're going to keep riding it out with him, either extend him or trade him, you know, and figure it out that way. But a player who's going to have value, who should look better once he slide backs into the role that he always should have been in the first place. And a guy that I think the Nets, you know, are high on, you know, justifiably. So that's the number one pick, Mikhail Bridges. Lucas has number two. The floor is yours.
And just one clarification. This isn't based on the Nets constrictions, right? Like, let's say I wanted to draft Dennis Smith Jr., knowing that it's probably unlikely they can re-sign him next year. That doesn't matter, right?
No, it's just based on, you know, contract, talent, production. Oh, yeah. Who would you want?
So with my second pick, this is obviously where it gets interesting, I think. I'm going to go with Nick Claxton. I'm just taking the best player on the board. I think everything we've heard about his contract, I know he's an unrestricted free agent this summer, but if you can sign him in that $20 to $25 million range, maybe even descend the contract as they did with Cam Johnson, knowing that next year probably isn't the contending window and it starts after that. I'm going to take Nick. I think in the $20, $25 million a year range, that's a really good player. I've always been a little bit higher on him. And, you know, when they were playing him in drop coverage, the defense suffered, but they were third, fourth, fifth in rebounding rate. I think that's something you can work with. And then basically since they've been switching him, you can see what a defensive game changer that is. They're like 10th in defense since they started doing that, even higher in half court defense. He just does so much on that end of the floor, whether it's switching and then coming back to the paint, as you often see when teams get into second side actions. He's good for over two blocks a game. And then on the offensive end, he's probably not like going to lead the league in field goal percentage as he did last season, taking a bunch of hook shots that had friendly rolls last year. But he's probably a little better, I would say, than 62-63% from two as he is this season. So if you peg that guy in as 65-66% finisher on not just, you know, lobbed and dunks, but some kind of self-created hook shots and stuff, the Nets have been running inverted pick and roll with him. I think that's a guy that is significantly better, if not comfortably better, on both ends of the floor than your average starting center in this league. And I know there's a thing about paying centers. Yeah. Understandably so. A lot of them don't have the offensive creation that the top guys have. But if you can lock a guy in like that, with all the concerns, size, rebounding, whatever it is, at $20, $25 million a year for 4 or 5 years, which is what the consensus seems to be on his next contract. It's just a really good player making about 14% of the cap going forward as we see this cap spike. And to me, I'm comfortably taking that guy. It's going to be ages 25 to 28 on that contract. So I'm feeling pretty good taking Nick Claxton as the second overall pick.
CJ, number three.
You know, I think I'm going to go best player available, and that's Cam Thomas, man. You know, he's going to be in a contract. This is a contract season for him, and, you know, from what I understand, like there doesn't seem to be a huge market for him around the league. So maybe the Nets will be able to keep him in house for, you know, I don't want to call it a hometown discount, but a team friendly contract that allows them to continue to build out the rest of the roster. This is a homegrown talent for the Nets. This is a kid that has only gotten better each year he's been in the league with extended opportunity. And, you know, this year, you know, if the Nets had a better record, this would be a guy who has a case just about as good as anyone for a most improved player, I believe. I believe Cam Thomas's best days are ahead of him. You hear all his coaches and teammates talk about him, the strides he's not only made offensively, but at the defensive end of the floor. Over these past couple of games, you're starting to see an uptick in his rebounding. And I believe once he gets some, you know, consistent system and a little bit better talent around him, I think that his passing and playmaking abilities are only going to get better. You know, Cam is such a question mark because it's hard to tell exactly what his ceiling is going to be. But just looking at him right now, he's a hell of a scorer. He's one of the best young scoring guards in this league. And if you can get the other things out of Thomas consistently on a nightly basis, that's a guy you want to have on your roster.
Yep. And, you know, I got number four, but just quickly on Cam, you know, I think the contract obviously plays a big role in how you're projecting that out, because he's under contract for $4.0 million next year, and then he's a restricted free agent after that, and one of the more polarizing players around the NBA. So projecting where his, you know, contract is going to be once he hits free agency is an extremely difficult endeavor, and it obviously will depend a lot on how he produces next season. But a guy who I think, like you said, we're seeing the flashes of what he can do. He can score the ball in a variety of ways, and the playmaking, while the advanced numbers are still, you know, just bad for the whole season, you're seeing the flashes over the last like 15-20 games of at least, you know, showing a willingness to read the defensive coverages, take what the defense gives him, and then sometimes, you know, make some more advanced reads on defensive rotations when he's getting doubled, which he's been doubled a lot lately, understandably so, with how the rest of the Nets team's producing. So, you know, a guy who could potentially have really good value, and a guy who I think hasn't played a lot. I mean, like, if you look at some of his comps, who, you know, whether you want to talk about, you know, I don't think he'll ever be a Donovan Mitchell, but just like a shorter combo guard and some of those guys, or whoever you want to say, those guys played a lot in their first two seasons. This is really the first season that Cam's getting extended run. And when you talk about playmaking and vision and feel and defensive rotations and things like that, you got to play to, you know, get a feel for that stuff. And Cam's finally getting that opportunity. So I think, you know, a good pick there, and a guy that I think could have a lot of value in coming years. At number four, I'm going to go with Cam Johnson, who I think is the best player available. Another much maligned player, you know, between the twins, a guy who just signed a four-year, $94.5 million contract extension last summer, and frankly just hasn't really been able to get going, has battled a rash of injuries. He had the hamstring where he missed the whole preseason. Then he comes back for the first game. He has the calf injury, misses eight games. Then he had, you know, an adductor injury, missed four games. His ankle injury, missed three games. And a guy who has yet to live up to the expectations of what you felt for that contract, but still a guy who's 6'8", obviously can shoot. You know, he's been kind of streaky, but is at 40% this year on career high volume, I think like 6.2 attempts per game. And a guy who I think in these last few games, you know, those pairs of Atlanta matchups last night against Orlando, like you're seeing some of the things that he is able to do. And do I have any grand illusions that he's going to be like this high level, you know, creator, you know, on the ball, secondary? Like, no, I don't. But I think he can do enough of it with the three-point shooting. He's not a great defender, but he has good size and versatility there. And I think if you could slide him potentially, you know, to the three where he's not playing power forward maybe as much as he had at times this season, to get some more rebounding and defense and bulk alongside him, I think that he's a player that's still very valuable. The contract is, you know, descending, as Lucas pointed out when talking about Nick Claxton. And a guy that, you know, I think if you put him, you know, similar to Mikal Bridges, not to, you know, as much of an extent, but you put him next to the high usage, you know, lead guy that every good team needs to have, I think he's a guy that's going to look better, obviously, and a guy who's able to, you know, going to be able to produce. So one thing I will say, he's got to start producing a little bit more in clutch situations. You know, a few weeks back, I rolled out his clutch numbers. He's like, he was like 3 for 17 from three in the clutch. Like, he's had a lot of, not a lot, but he's had some big shots that I think are memorable this season, and he hasn't been able to hit them. And, you know, with that, it's drawn some Joe Harris 2.0 comparisons, but we, you know, we're going to need to see some, you know, development in that regard. But I do still think when you look at, you know, the rest of the Nets roster and the skills that he is able to bring to the table at his size, a guy who I think, you know, has some value and will be good, you know, on a lot of contending teams would want a guy like that. So, you know, brief thoughts on CJ, if I, you know, Cam Johnson, CJ, if either of you guys have any.
Yeah, I don't think it's a coincidence that he looks like a much more productive NBA player when the Nets have a guard that's consistently getting into the paint.
Yeah.
Down the stretch of last year when Dinwiddie was averaging double-digit assists, it was like, oh, Cam Johnson's providing value on offense. And now that Dennis Schroeder's here, it's like, oh, this guy's providing value on offense. I mean, he needs the table set up for him. But I do, you know, this guy's a plus offensive player just by virtue of being 6'8 and a sniper. Teams respect him. And I definitely enjoy that he's just put his head down and been like, I'm not the shiftiest guy, but I'm going to get towards the rim, you know, when guys close out on me lately. And, you know, it's led to closer to 15 shot attempt nights. It's like, you don't want Cam Johnson out there taking 6-7 shots a night. And when he's not aggressive and when the Nets don't have an aggressive table setter, you don't see how he gets that many shot attempts. So definitely, I think the plus of post All-Star break for the Nets has been Cam Johnson just looking more aggressive, playing with more force. And again, $20 million really isn't a ton in today's NBA. So I think that's a smart fourth pick just for me.
All right, Lucas, roll right into number five.
All right, I will go right into number five. And there's a few contenders right here. And I'm torn between Dorian Finney-Smith and Lonnie Walker the fourth, actually. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to pick Lonnie just because this is a guy that can score. It's a guy who could, if you're looking at comps around the league, take a potential Malik Monk type leap. I'm not saying he's going to become one of the best, like, assist guys, playmakers in the league off the bench, but he's just been undervalued, I think, for much of his career. He's not playing a lot of minutes. I think there's a possibility you could get him on a really friendly long-term contract this summer. But if I had to guess, I think Walker probably goes for another sort of prove-it deal.
Yeah.
So I'm going to take Dorian. I know it's not the sexiest pick right here, but I believe he has the – is it a player or a team option for 2025-26?
Player option. So he's at $15 million next season, and then he's $15.4 million player option in 2025-26.
I would say, you know, it's pretty early if he takes that, but just knowing how much money that is next year and knowing how much money that is the following year, it's really not a lot. Today's NBA, we've been saying. And so, you know, it's not draft day after this pick. You know, the whole front office isn't going to go out and celebrate with beers after picking Dorian at number five, but I'm happy with it. I mean, his play really dipped before the trade deadline. And I think we can read into maybe why. But he is the guy that when the Nets are right, he's doing the dirty work. They're switching Claxton, and he's cracking back on rebounds. He's guarding up. He is, like, way more off the dribble juice attacking closeouts than he's ever had in his career this season, which is nice to see. It's not always pretty. But it's just a solid player that, particularly if the Nets get this offensive creator we keep talking about, it's a guy that you really trust to play 30, 31 minutes a game. And I haven't seen really any signs of physical decline yet. Great locker room guy. Everybody loves him. You know, consummate teammate. So I'm going to start out with Claxton, Dorian Finney-Smith, and I think build a pretty solid defense so far. So that is where I'm going at pick number five, DFS.
Yeah, and just briefly, like a guy, you know, said, if they get, it's a theme on the Nets roster. Obviously, yeah. A team that has a lot of those 3-and-D wings, and that's been, you know, a big point of discussion. And, you know, between Mikhail and CJ and Dorian, like, I've said this, while I don't think the Nets are, like, close to contention right now, I think that they're, like, the rare team that if you brought that high usage in guy, it might elevate them more than other bad teams, because they have guys who, you know, have played alongside those guys and had success and are really more comfortable, you know, in those complementary roles and have been good at them, frankly. So, CJ, we're on to you at number six.
You know, some might view my next pick as a reach, but, you know, you just said it yourself, Slater. I mean, the Nets aren't close to contention right now. I think that's pretty obvious. And, you know, the players we're selecting right now are supposed to be based on, you know, who we think would be a good fit with the franchise long term. With that said, I'm taking Noah Clowney with my next pick.
Ooh, I'm not gonna lie, I was thinking about Noah. You know, clarification, I said 3 to 4 year window, so like medium term, I'd say.
Okay.
But even then, like, I was thinking about Noah, and you know, I see where you're going with this, and you know, keep going because I like it.
Yeah, I'm taking Noah here. You know, high draft pick, tons of talent, supreme athleticism. He has a lot of, you know, Nick Claxton-like qualities, you know, I would say. And, you know, he's been tearing up in the G League his rookie year. We've seen some flashes of what he's capable of when he's called back up to the big club. My mind immediately goes back to them. That fateful Milwaukee game that may or may not have completely turned this season around for the Nets. But, you know, I have liked a lot from what I've seen from Clowney. You know, each time he's taken the floor this season, he's obviously extremely young at just 19 years old, right? 19, right? He's, you know, I think he had a career night in the G League the other day. And, you know, what we do know is that the Nets as a franchise have never really, in recent years, had issues, you know, developing their talent at center. I think that, you know, Claxton will be in the next line with, you know, Jared Allen, that was before him. And who was after Jared? Am I?
Daron Clax.
Yeah, Daron Claxton. I mean, even Daron, I think his best basketball is ahead of him.
Yeah.
I just like, you know, this is coming from an Auburn guy, right? But I like a lot of what Noah brings to the table as a player. I think the sky's the limit for him. And I think, you know, while he does still need a little bit more time to develop, I do think that eventually the Nets are going to, you know, go towards more of a rebuild situation. And he's a really good young piece that this team could build around. And, you know, from my years covering the Warriors, having to, you know, see how Steve Kerr was managing the minutes of Jonathan Kuminga, Moses Moody, two pretty high draft picks that just couldn't find their way into the rotation on, you know, veteran-laden rosters. Kind of a similar situation to what Noah finds himself in this year. He didn't really go to a team where they had the benefit of just throwing him out there from day one. But I do believe that in the NBA, you know, as a young guy, that's the best way to learn. I don't think this is like the NFL where, you know, if you're a quarterback, you can benefit from, you know, sitting and watching for a couple of years. I think in basketball, you just got to go out there and do it and get those reps and learn through your mistakes. And I do think Noah's going to have more of an opportunity to do that entering next season. And, you know, I believe that, you know, his development will follow suit. And I think he's going to be, you know, a hell of, you know, he's still on a rookie deal. I think that he's going to be a hell of a player for Brooklyn sooner rather than later.
Yeah, I would just add that it's the most sure thing positive of their season, maybe. Like, yeah, you know, Nets fans, I understand maybe being frustrated not seeing him. He's had a really good G League season. Like, he looks a lot better than he did in November. And that's all you can ask really from a 19-year-old, just to make end over end improvements. So I would say that the trend line is just looking very encouraging. And, you know, he's going to get close to, what, 1,000 minutes in the G League? Probably more helpful than maybe, what, 10 minutes a night? Although I do agree with CJ's point, like, maybe by next season even, it's time to start, you know, getting him NBA reps and going out there and do it. So just to inject some positivity, I've watched a lot of Long Island this year for him. And, you know, he's had an A, B-plus at the worst grade season. So at least that is something to smile about.
Yeah, I got Noah's numbers up because I know a lot of Nets fans probably aren't following what's going on in Long Island too, you know, fiercely. But he's at 17 points a game. He's shooting 49% from the field. He's got, you know, 8 rebounds per game, 2.2 assists, 2 blocks, shooting, you know, low 30s from three. But the free throw percentage, that's 78%. So I think that's encouraging, and he has good form. And, like, even when he's come up to the Nets for those brief stints, like, he's not scoring and doing things like that, but I've been really impressed just, you know, from a positioning standpoint with him, from him, you know, his post defense, his rebounding, just like a lot of different things, his motor. I really like what I've seen from him with things that don't necessarily show up in the stat sheet. So like I said, 3 to 4 years, I thought, you know, maybe if it was a little beyond that, Noah would go really high in this draft. CJ, I still understand where you're going with that. And, you know, he was probably going to be one of my next guys. So what are we on now? We're at number 7. I'm struggling with this one. It's really between Lonnie Walker and Dennis Schroeder. And, you know, I think the contract situation plays a lot into it with Lonnie, like what CJ, like what Lucas said about, you know, are you able to extend him on a really good value deal, or is he taking another prove it deal? And I think that he's taking another prove it deal, as Lucas said. So I'm going to go with Schroeder just from, you know, a consistency and a reliability standpoint. And I really like what I've seen from Schroeder over these, what is it now, 14 or 15 games since he's joined the Nets. He's, you know, he's obviously shot the lights out from three. I think he struggled last night, but he's towards the top of the league in 3-point percentage during that span, and just has been a guy who's been, you know, not filling everything the Nets needed at point guard, but a guy who is that steadying presence. And I think who can really be a good change of pace option with a second unit on a good team, and a guy who just plays hard. And I think, you know, from what we've heard about him in the locker room standpoint, has a really good mentality of playing on a contender and brings the right things, you know, in terms of mindset. And for contract, it's $13.0 million next season, then an unrestricted free agent in 2025-26. So, you know, that contract, it'll depend on, you know, what happens with him next year. He's 30 years old, but I think that he's got a lot of juice left in the tank. And I think that he's a guy that, you know, provides a lot of value if he could be a more so a change of pace off option off the bench, you know, for a good team, and a guy who I think plays really hard and has some value. So going to go with Schroeder there. Now we're on to Lucas at number 8.
Yeah, this is where I'm very happy that Lonnie Walker is still left on the board. I'm going to take him. You know, I needed some offense on my team, and he's providing that. I think that there is like a Cam Thomas comp here in terms of, I think his best basketball is still ahead of him. He played more minutes than Thomas on his rookie deal in San Antonio, but just with the up and down nature of his going to LA, in and out of the starting lineup, injuries, you see these flashes of a very, very valuable piece, whether off the bench, or is he like a scoring guard that you can start similar to Thomas? But I think, you know, shooting 43% from three maybe isn't going to happen every year. He's been in the mid-30s, high-30s, most of it. But you can just see him improving. He's made some really nice passes this year. Again, that's where, like, Malik Monk is the really high-end comparison. Yeah. Like, if he has his feet set from three, it's probably going in. I think you feel that more and more with Lonnie as you do with Malik. And then you hope that just his ability to get by people, get to the rim, can result in a little more playmaking. I think as he gets older, you know, we'll see more under control finishing at the rim. Like, he's only shooting, I have it right here, 60% from the rim. Like, that could go up. But it's just an offensive guy that I'd want to take a bet on. I think he's proven to be a guy you want around. Nets speak highly of his work ethic, his work as a teammate. If you can get him on a semi-reasonable medium-term contract, that's definitely a guy that can contribute. And he has contributed in flashes this year, which, you know, a huge question I get asked by non-Nets NBA fans and people are like, what's going on with Lonnie? Like, I got three different messages last night. Hey, the Nets are shooting negative 10% from three. Like, why isn't Lonnie playing? And I was
that was a little strange last night. Yeah. I haven't touched on the game, but none of us were in Orlando, but I think that would have been a question if we were
there. Yes. It was just surprising. So I'm taking Lonnie Walker. I'm feeling comfortable about it. I think if it's the Nets, if it's another NBA team, like, he's going to be a coveted free agent this season at the price he will probably sign at. And I wouldn't be surprised to see him next season, if he goes to another team, if it is a contender, like, swinging a playoff game like he did for LA last year. Like, the guy has that in him. And that's something I want to bet on, because when you get to the eighth best player on a roster, you don't always find that.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, like you said, a really, you know, not crazy low floor, but there's a big gap, you know, between the ceiling and the floor with Lonnie, just based on injuries too. For me, injuries were a part of that. He's a guy that's had some struggles in that department, and the contract uncertainty also, but a really good pick there. And just clarifying, like, I wasn't doing this envisioning us like building teams where we're filling needs for our team, but I think your pick would have stood there regardless. So, like, not that big of a deal, but yeah, a really good value on Lonnie, and a guy who I think has been really impressive, although in a little bit of a weird up and down season for the Nets, you know, in regard to his role. But we're on to, what is it, number nine now with CJ. CJ.
I want Iguodala. Nah, seriously, though. You know, I wanted to take Dennis Smith Jr. with this pick. This is a guy you could obviously, you know, lock up long-term for a pretty friendly deal. It's a guy who's been searching for his NBA home for a while now. And you need people on your roster like Dennis Smith Jr., right? You need those junkyard dogs, right? You need those, you know, great locker room presences. And he does both of those things. But because of the limitations, you know, in his all-around game, and, you know, in the fact, just the fact that, you know, the addition of Dennis Schroeder, you know, in my opinion, I feel like that really, like, hurts Dennis Smith Jr.'s chances of, you know, maybe returning to Brooklyn next season, right? Yeah. But, you know, because of that stuff, I'm gonna go with another rookie that's really had some impressive moments this season. That's Jalen Wilson, another guy that has seemed to just get better and better with the more reps he has. He has, you know, one of the better motors on this team. He's an improved 3-point shooter, and I think as he gets more, you know, aggressive, the more comfortable the older he gets, he's going to get, you know, more aggressive, and I think he already has the makings of a pretty solid 3-and-D player, and obviously someone that's going to be on a rookie contract for the next couple of years. Great kid, another good locker room guy. He's young. Oh, he's not young in comparison to most rookies, right? Four-year guy at Kansas, but you know, he is not yet tainted. Too tainted by everything that's been going on in Brooklyn lately. So I think when it comes, you know, time to, you know, rebuild and, you know, try to have a clean slate, I think he's the type of guy that you're going to want in your rotation and continue to give him minutes and just see what kind of player he can become.
Definitely. And that is back to me. So we're at number 10 now. And, you know, this is a tough one. I think, obviously, like, there's two, maybe three candidates here. We got Dennis Smith Jr. left. We have De'Ron Sharpe left. You know, if you wanted to reach a little bit, you got a guy in Dariq Whitehead. But based on his injury concerns, I think that rules him out. I think I'm going to go with De'Ron Sharpe just based off of what he's shown this year. Lucas looked like he, you know, had that in mind. But, you know, De'Ron, I think, has been really impressive. I think he's made a leap that I think this was probably like a near top of the 100% outcome of what you could have hoped for if you were the Nets in terms of his development. He's a guy that's shown flashes of touch and finishing around the rim and finishing through traffic, things that he really struggled with in his first 2 years that limited his playing time. He's made really impressive strides in that regard, in my opinion. And then he's continued to be just the absolute beast on the boards that we all knew that he could be. I think he's second in the NBA in rebounding percentage behind, I think, only Andre Drummond. So impressive stint from Dayron. He's shown a little more juice as a rim protector than I think you could have had. He's been, you know, better, you know, playing in the drop and even switching at times. Like he looked like a fish out of water switching sometimes in the last couple seasons and doing some of those things, and even in drop in terms of positioning. So he's answered a lot of questions that I had about him, you know, on the offensive end as a finisher and then defending in space a little bit. So really happy with what Dayron has shown. And I think it's just, you know, it's another, you know, like I think CJ touched on earlier, it's another like check mark of Sean Marks with that center position and him being able to find some guys that have been able to have some really good production late in the draft. So Dayron's under contract like Cam Thomas for $4 million next year. Then he's a restricted free agent after that. You know, we'll see where the contract ends up. You know, backup centers aren't always the most sought after position, but I think Dayron's a good one who I think can provide really consistent and steady minutes for a decent team at this point in his career. So going with him there. Back to Lucas for, what are we at, 11?
Yeah. This is where it gets tough. I mean, I think maybe it's been tough. The one pattern I've noticed is like we all have pretty positive things to say about these guys, which is reflective of the Nets, I think. Like, yeah, underwhelming season, but it's hard to pinpoint it on any couple guys just because everyone feels cast a bit, you know, above their heads. But I think just on an individual level, the Nets have players you would want on a team. I mean, we knew that going into the season, but it's still funny to be this generally optimistic about guys on a team like 14 games under 500.
It's not the players, it's their fit.
Yes.
Together. Yeah. Like they have talented players. I mean, there's a reason why there were, you know, so many teams rumored in Nets pieces around the trade deadline, because they have players that are that contribute to winning. It's just the way this roster was constructed and how the pieces don't fit together. Yeah. They're high quality pieces, you know. They're all, you know, pieces from Target and, you know, your high end quality, you know, your high end hobby store, right? But when you sit down to put those pieces together, you know, they don't fit.
Yeah, it is the definition of a cart before the horse situation. Yeah.
I put it this way: there are pieces to different puzzle sets.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah. Look at you with the analogy there.
Dude. Yeah,
That's why I should have had you on Believe in Nets before this, but.
Yeah, all the 3-and-D wings are corner pieces, and we just have like corner pieces. Credit to Dayron, man. Like at the start of the year, if you remember, they were like, we asked about the rebounding, and JV was like, you know, we'll give Dayron a chance to see. And now it's like when he's healthy, you can't take him out of the rotation. So
he was great before he had that. What was it? He missed like what?
The knee injury.
He was great before that absence.
Yeah. It was
great.
He definitely was. I will take, and this is kind of cheating here, I'm going to take Ben Simmons. We got $40 million in expiring. That's a valuable asset. Like, you know, I don't think he's going to help a contending team at least next season. But you have this huge trade piece, and I know that's not super value, but you can get a potential trade done with just him as the salary. You don't have to include Dorian Finney-Smith or Cam Johnson or whoever. And then you have $40 million coming off the books in a year from now. You know, I look around at the other Nets pieces and it's like, are any of them really, am I banking on them helping me winning a chip in the next 3 to 4 years? Dennis Smith Jr. was the one I thought about, but I don't know exactly what's going to come of his contract situation. I'm not saying Trendon Watford isn't intriguing or Derek, but at this point, give me that expiring salary. Give me a front office that I trust to make good use of it, and we'll go from there. As to his season, he's been not good when he's played. He's been like comfortably worse than he was in the preseason when he decided to like attack the rim for a few games. He can't play him at the five because he doesn't really have an interest in protecting the rim or making those rotations. This is like a theme even going back to Philly, and it's just impossible at this point to run half court offense with him because he does the Trae Young thing where he makes the initial pass and then he stands by half court. That's the thing I've probably been most depressed by in terms of his offense, in terms of his actual on-court game. He doesn't make himself available in the right spots on offense. It's not just that he can't shoot. It's that he's not doing the little things. Like, yeah, he sets hard screens, but he doesn't roll to the basket. You know, I'm not going to get into all the injury stuff, his mental blah, 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 that Nets fans like to get into. But that's just what I've seen on court. And it's frustrating that the Nets just don't push the ball and play with the same pace when he's off the floor. I don't really see any huge obstacle to them doing that. Like, it's not like he's making super high-level reads. He's just getting and going and finding the first open guy. And that's been fun to watch. But overall, I'm not taking Ben for that. I'm taking him for the salary. And, you know, I know that's a little less valuable in the modern NBA than it was, the big expiry number. But, you know, maybe we can do something with it.
All right, on to CJ.
Hey, DSJ still on the board.
Yeah, there you go. You got your junkyard dog.
There you go. You got him.
Yeah, I'm just kind of like what I said before. Guys like him were very, very important, you know, to winning. And although his contract situation is murky, you know, I think that if there is an avenue for Brooklyn to bring him back, they will. Because you're going to need a couple guys like that to get through these, you know, rocky, uncertain times. But, you know, because of his contract situation and some of his offensive limitations, it's probably why he fell, you know, so far in our draft. But, you know, the things that he brings on a night in, night out basis are invaluable. And for that alone, I think he deserves to, you know, at least be picked.
Yeah, I think his offensive limitations, like Lucas said, like, I don't think he's a guy that's going to be on the floor in like a high leverage playoff series for extended minutes, just because it's too glaring, some of those things. But he's a guy that has swung some games for the Nets in the regular season. And just whenever I'm like, oh man, like another like skip pass, found DSJ and he missed the corner three, he runs up from behind and steals the ball and then, you know, kicks it to somebody else for a three in the backcourt. And I'm like, okay, yeah, you know, he does those things. So it's very up and down with him, but a guy that I think like has garnered a lot of respect from the locker room. And I've been impressed with what he does in spite of some of those offensive limitations and the buy-in that he has to doing those things. So impressed there. We're down to the bare bones now. I think we got three left. Dariq Whitehead, Trenton Wofford, Keita Bates-Diop. I'm going to go with Whitehead here. And I think obviously the biggest reason that he hasn't gone before this is just the injury concerns. And that's understandable with, you know, the struggles that he had at Duke, the two surgeries on his foot. Then he, you know, has another surgery, you know, ending this season due to like a shin issue. So, you know, a guy who was encouraging, like a number two prospect in the country out of high school, a guy who, you know, has some skills that they're, you know, you can work with in terms of just his fluidity and his 3-point shooting, but a guy that has major injury concerns. And it's really just kind of a crapshoot projecting where he's going to be. So I'm going with Dariq there, and, you know, he could end up being really solid value at that spot, depending on how it plays out with him. But yeah, getting him there. There we go.
Hey, there were times when Dariq was projected to be a top three pick coming out of high school. You know, injuries have, you know, certainly been unfortunate, but, and then we've seen injuries easily derail people's careers. Right. But, you know, like you said, it's one of those gambles where, if he can get healthy and stay healthy, I mean, who knows what the Nets might have on their hands.
Exactly, yeah. There you go.
Yeah, it's like he does, because he's so young, too. He gets a do-over at that rookie year next year. He's going to be barely 20. And then one note on Dennis Smith I want to say, underrated passer. Like, a lot of the Dayron stuff early on is because Dennis is so good at finding him on the interior. I know Charlotte people talked about that, but yeah, I was still, like, surprised. Really good interior passer. And to that end, I'd love to see him play with a big that can pop and roll, so you're not always playing him with another non-shooter. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if he ends up on a team with a stretch big next year and has a really good offensive season. Or not really good, but, you know, passable. Yeah. I'm gonna take Trenton right here. You know, maybe he will forgive me and not ratio me on again, because I said he needs to shoot more threes. The Nets really view him as a point guard. Like, they really do view him as a primary ball handler, like not a big wing, like a point guard. We're not playing him next to Dennis Smith Jr.
He has a really underrated feel for the game. You know?
Yeah, Definitely. Very. I think he would do well to lean into that more, to take more threes. So he's not, as I said, a non-shooting guard, which he's been at times. Just to find out if he is like a viable spacer. I think sometimes when he drives, he gets like tunnel vision. You know, he's not the level of passer you would hope or think. Yeah. Maybe he is. We just haven't seen it. Like when he's getting into that 8-foot range, it's like always a floater, but he gets there. He's a 6'8 guy with a comfortable enough handle to like get into the paint. And, you know, with my spot in the draft, that's something I'm willing to bet on. So I'll take Trendon. You know, one of the reasons I tweeted that is it's like, this guy's clearly talented at that size, at that age. Like, you just want him to just do the defense just a little bit more and the three-point shooting just a little bit more because there's clearly something there. Like, he has a lot of talent for, like, a fringe guy, more so than you would think.
Yeah.
So I'm taking Trendon. I'm feeling pretty good about it at this point in the draft.
And no pick left for CJ.
Oh, no. There's one. And y'all all messed up. You let my guy slide all the way to me at the last pick.
To what?
Keita Bates Diop.
Yeah. Well, okay. There was a pick, but I meant no decision.
Yeah. I meant Jacob Gill. I was like, is he going to go
Jacob Gill? I didn't have two ways in play here.
Okay.
So we were going with standard contracts. But you're your guy, CJ. If you got anything on Keita, you know, go ahead.
I hope he's selling into the New York area well.
Okay. All right. So that does it for the first ever Believe in Nets player draft. You know, running down the draft board, we had Bridges 1, Claxton 2, Thomas 3, Johnson 4, Finney-Smith 5, Clowney 6, Schroeder 7, Walker 8, Wilson 9, Sharp 10. Those were the top 10. I didn't write down after that, but, you know, a pretty telling, you know, exercise with, you know, how you view some of these guys moving forward. And like, you know, both of you guys pointed out, the positive things that we had to say about a lot of the guys on this roster, a team that is struggling big time with, you know, puzzle pieces that don't fit, a lot of corner puzzle pieces, as Lucas said, but a team that has talented players and a team that I think, you know, could be elevated by getting that high usage guy more so than some other teams. So appreciate you guys for coming on. Any parting thoughts for Nets World as it burns to the ground at the end of this season?
Don't be surprised if you hear them, I think, with Trey this summer, just because this season is gone. This isn't like inside information or anything like that, but just because the vibes have been so poor, I don't think they want any more to wait as much for Donovan Mitchell, if, you know, assuming that's still on the table. I think this summer they really start exploring like how to get this guy. And it seems like it's going to be Trey. At least Atlanta's going to put feelers out there. So I think you might hear that. And I'm personally going to say I would love it. I think he would just be so fun to watch with this roster. I think he would elevate them immediately. I think you can hide him on defense well with this roster. He's made leaps on that end, but that is something I would like to see for them to seriously consider. Just, I think this team would be so much more watchable and fun next season. I know the offseason is a way away.
Lucas coming in hot. You know, that's a whole nother podcast that we might have to get to soon, but okay. I like that there. CJ, anything from you? Got thrown into the fire on the Nets, you know, with things just crashing to the ground.
Hey, Nets fans, like, pray to whatever God you believe in, because it's going to be a rough landing.
All right. Appreciate you guys for coming on. We'll be on soon. Maybe we'll chop up some potential offseason targets with what Lucas was talking about. But appreciate you both for taking the time, and I'll see you soon. That does it for this episode of Believe in Nets on the Believe Podcast Network, your one-stop shop for everything happening across the sports and entertainment world. Really hope you guys enjoyed the draft with CJ and Lucas. I think it gives you a good look into how the Nets could potentially prioritize some of the players on this roster as they look to build it out towards contention over this next 3 to 4 years with that potential title window. So I think it was a good exercise. As always, thank you for listening. Make sure to subscribe to Believe in Nets on all streaming platforms, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube. Smash the like button. Leave a 5-star review. I'm Eric Slater, Brooklyn Nets beat reporter for ClutchPoints.com. We'll be back with more news, updates, analysis, everything here on Believe in Nets. Also, you can follow all my articles daily at ClutchPoints, and you can follow all news, updates, analysis at Twitter at @EricSlater_. Really hope you guys enjoy this. I'll be back in the coming days and weeks as the Nets close out this season, see if they can put something productive together. But as we go further and further towards the offseason, we'll obviously have more talk, taking a little bit of a 10,000-foot view of where this team's at and how they can look to go moving forward, as we did in this episode. Talk to you guys soon.
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.